You've probably noticed by now I'm a bit of an extrovert. I do need some downtime, especially as I've gotten older, like a Sunday afternoon nap after a full morning of preaching and presiding at worship. But as extroverts do, I get my energy from being around people and interacting with large groups. And also, as extroverts do, I process things orally, out loud, in the moment. Our committee and council members know that well. And so does Robin, our office manager. She often is the audience for my processing when something confusing, frustrating, baffling, or goofy has happened. I think it's a good guess that the disciple Peter was also an extrovert. We do hear occasionally in the Gospels about other individual disciples saying something, asking a question, or arguing amongst themselves. For instance, the account of Thomas, who expresses doubt that Jesus has been raised from the dead and then exclaims, "My Lord and my God," after Jesus appears to him. But Peter is the one who tends to blurt out stuff. When Jesus tells his disciples that he must undergo great suffering, be rejected by the religious leaders, and be killed, Peter's mouth immediately starts moving. "Never, Lord, this must not happen to you." Imagine having the nerve to rebuke Jesus. Except I doubt that is Peter's intention. It feels more like he is thinking out loud, processing, trying to make sense of Jesus' terrible prediction. Just 6 days after this prediction, that's the time stamp we got at the beginning of today's gospel reading, Jesus takes Peter, James, and John with him up a high mountain. We don't know what conversation occurs during their hike, whether Jesus gives these three a hint of what is to come at the peak, or tells them why he is leading them apart from the rest of the disciples. And of course, it's possible that they're all huffing and puffing too much to even talk to one another. The Gospel of Mark does tell us what happens at the mountain summit, though. It is the event after which this day in the church year is named. Jesus is transfigured. Now, that's a word we don't use very often in casual conversation. It means to be transformed or changed in appearance, typically in an exalting or glorifying manner. Jesus' clothes become so dazzling in these moments that it's like some otherworldly Clorox has been at work, bleaching them whiter than white. Two incredibly important individuals from the story of God's people also show up. The great, and it should be noted, long gone, Moses and Elijah appear and talk with Jesus while the three disciples look on. What a wondrous, amazing, beautiful, confusing sight that must have been. Oh, and terrifying. We hear that the disciples are terrified. And just so you know, the original Greek here would be better translated as the disciples are freaked out. So, of course, in the midst of all of this, Peter, our presumed extrovert's mouth starts moving. And what he blurts out doesn't make much sense. Peter is freaked out, but says it's good to be there. Then he suggests that the group build three dwellings, one each for Moses, Elijah, and Jesus, like the Ten Commandments guy, who's been dead for centuries, the prophet who was carried away by a chariot of fire, as we heard in our first reading, and Jesus are going to settle down together up there on that mountain. Perhaps this impulsive idea of Peter's is his way of interrupting Jesus' journey to Jerusalem, his way of keeping Jesus from traveling on to his predicted fate, suffering, rejection, and death. But then, yet another wondrous, amazing, beautiful, confusing thing happens. A cloud overshadows the whole entourage, and from the cloud comes a voice. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." If you're experiencing a bit of deja vu here, don't worry. Just weeks ago, the story of Jesus' baptism in the River Jordan included a very similar occurrence, similar but not the same. Because when Jesus came up out of the baptismal waters, the voice from above spoke directly to him. "You are my son, the beloved," it said. "With you I am well pleased." But now God the Father addresses a larger audience. Peter, James, John, and us. Listen to him. Listen to my beloved son. We humans aren't really very good at listening. We try, but our minds wander. We pick up pieces of what's being said or sung or prayed, but not the whole. We layer our own bias on other people's utterances, spin their words to our way of thinking, and often, while somebody else is speaking, we are busy not listening, but figuring out what we are going to say next. Listen to him, to Jesus, God's beloved son. Listen. When Jesus speaks of a love that runs out to meet a prodigal child hoping to find home again. Listen. When Jesus teaches that the last shall be first, that the merciful will receive mercy, that those who mourn will be comforted. Listen. When Jesus tells us that God's mercy is vast and deep and wide and God's kingdom is near. Listen. When Jesus promises that he will be with us always, even to the end of the age. Listen. And not just because from a cloud on a mountaintop, God commanded it. But listen because Jesus listened first to his Father in heaven's call to step down off that mountain, away from his dazzling glory and bleach-white clothes, down and back into the muck and mess of human suffering and need. God's Son, the Beloved, stepped down from that mountain to do battle with the devil, the evil that possesses God's children. He stepped down from that mountain to do battle with sin, with all that stands in the way of our relationships with God and with each other. He stepped down from that mountain to do battle with death, to make his way to Jerusalem and the cross that awaited him there. These are the stories we will be telling in the weeks ahead. For we are on the edge of Lent, just a few days from foreheads smudged with ashes, the reminder that we are dust and to dust we shall return. Today, we'll sing our last Alleluias for a while. By Wednesday, the paraments will be purple and the crosses will be veiled. For now, though, let us linger a bit longer in the glory of Christ, in the holy mystery of the transfiguration, in the mountaintop experience. For it is good for us to be here, to confess, to pray, to sing, to eat, to listen.